Welcome to Thursday's Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are happy that you are with us on this 23rd of October. A lot to get to today, including a haunted lab at the North Dakota Gateway to Science, where Hope Berdolsky tells us how to make floating ghosts and explains why spooky science is behind them. Then we'll head to the newsroom with our weekly review of the news with Dave Thompson. And later, Area Voices producer Andrew Zingel takes us to Reamer, Minnesota to meet muralist Cheyenne Renee, who's painting her way across America, one mural at a time. Today on Main Street, we recognize that there's a lot of buzz around North Dakota tourism right now, and for good reason. The Badlands were just named one of National Geographic's Best of the World destinations for 2026, putting our rugged landscapes alongside global hotspots like Morocco and Rwanda. Add to that the highly anticipated opening of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library next July, right in time for America's 250th birthday. And it sure seems to be shaping up like a milestone year for our state. Joining us to talk about this and more is the person leading the charge, Sarah Adi Coleman. She's North Dakota's Director of Tourism and Marketing. Sarah, welcome back to Main Street.
Oh, great to be with you, Craig. Always fun to talk about all the exciting things that are happening in our state.
Oh, my goodness. And you should have a laundry list to share with us today. And I want to start with that recognition from National Geographic. Best of World, North Dakota's Badlands were just named one of the top 25 places to visit. Congratulations for that. What does it mean for our state to get that kind of national and global recognition? From your perspective, as someone who plans on how to leverage this stuff to attract visitors to our state?
You know, there are lots of lists, right? You can't look anywhere without seeing a list of the top this or the top that. But to be listed in the top 25, first of all, and by such a credible organization as Nat Geo is just, you know, remarkable. And so we're really excited about it. We think that they really look for soulful places, places that have meaning, have deeper experiences, not just the checklist kind of places that people want to go to check off their list, been there, done that, don't need to do it again. These are the kind of trips and the kind of experiences that change people and really make them want to plan and visit. So we couldn't be more thrilled with the recognition. And we're super excited, you know, with the timing of it. We know that we're kind of at a exciting time in the Badlands of North Dakota and in Medora. And so, yeah, it's great timing.
For those who haven't been out to the West in a while, what makes the Badlands so special? You think of the name, it's not the most attractive name,
right?
Until you see. What's your perspective on the Badlands?
Yeah, you know, and people will talk about how it's so life-changing and so different. You know, you stop off on the way into the Badlands at Painted Canyon and just kind of experience the fact that you've got this beautiful scenery, but it's not you don't feel closed in like other places where you feel, you know, you get this glimpse, but you still have the vast horizons and it's just a special place. One of the, you know, obviously the reason Theodore Roosevelt went there to escape, but ended up healing. And I think it's one of those places that a lot of people like to escape to, and whether you're an outdoor recreation, you know, want a mountain bike or hike or whatever, or just take in the scenic drive and breathe in the fresh air and not be bumper to bumper, you know, going through a national park with, you know, 20,000 of your other, you know, other people at the same time. So yeah, it's just a really unique place.
Sarah, you brought up the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, and my wife and I marveled at it this summer when we went to the Medora musical, went over and just kind of looked at what's taking shape there. It's spectacular. I don't think there's any other way to describe it, at least from my perspective. It's set to open in Medora on the 4th of July festivities, just in time for the nation's 250th birthday. Again, from the marketing perspective, why is the library such a big deal for our state? And what do you think it will add to that Badlands experience you talked about, which is kind of different in a way, right? This one focused place.
Yeah. So this is such a remarkable place. And I think North Dakotans actually have less appreciation for it than people outside of our state, right? For some reason, they think a library, a president, you know, they just don't have the full grasp of what a remarkable world-renowned attraction this is going to be. The thought and planning that has gone into it. I was lucky enough to sit on the architectural review committee where we vetted the architects and how they all came out and spent weeks studying the landscape and learning about Theodore Roosevelt and what impacted him and how then the final design was developed to really encompass the legacy of Theodore Roosevelt, but also the surrounding area, because that was such an influence for him in setting his priorities for his presidency and setting his, you know, his values that we all appreciate and try to see continue. So the building itself is going to be a remarkable feat in its own. And then when you layer in the remarkable exhibits and how you're going to be able to walk through his whole life, and it's going to be a combination of artifacts and technology and fabulous North Dakota inspired building materials, and you're going to be able to walk on this live roof and enjoy the walking path around it to really see the natural prairie and the native prairie. It's just going to be a remarkable experience, and one that I think people are going to come from all over the world for decades to see.
What's your role then, Sarah? And
Well,
your
we're
team, I'm
work
sure,
yeah.
is gearing up for what will be a spectacular July 4th.
Absolutely. We you know, we've been working to obviously spread the word on it and get, you know, media involved in it, increase awareness. We're working together with the staff at the Presidential Library and of course our pro, you know, tourism people and promoters in the whole Medora area. They have gone with us to some shows. Recently, we did one of the largest international shows in Chicago. They were a booth participant with us. It's called IPW, the International Powwow. We have over 6,000 international buyers. We did a press conference at that event and brought our Joe Egan, our TR repriser, and Ed O'Keefe, who's the CEO of the library, out. And had, I think, over 300 at that press conference of media from all over the world. People are interested. They said it was one of the best conferences that they'd been to, press conferences and press briefings that they'd been to at this event. But when we're talking, you know, when we're talking to people about itineraries and how do we build out the TR Triangle, we call it. You know, we're right there with Mount Rushmore and Yellowstone National Park, and how do we make this a must-see part of those trips, whether you're coming from Norway or whether you're coming from Chicago or whether you're coming from, you know, Rugby. We want to kind of make it easy for people to plan experiences, kind of, and have that be the motivating piece. But the other part of that is it's not just Medora and the National Park that can celebrate Theodore Roosevelt. You know, there's sites across the state, and we're working on additional content on our website to help every community really, really think about what TR, you know, impact, what kind of an impact TR had on their community, or are there any sites or experiences that can help build out that. So we're really trying to use it as the magnet, but then build all of this other content and all these other experiences around it so that we can not only attract people for that visit to the library, but attract them for longer trips and to be able to keep them here longer.
How long are you telling folks that they might want to plan to spend at the library?
Yeah, you know, I think it's so hard. We get that question a lot, you know, whether you're going to the North Dakota Heritage Center or the Plains Art Museum or anything. Everybody's so different, right? And it seems like even within families, you get the people who want to read every placard, and then the people who just want to buzz through it. And so that's always really hard to answer. But I think the beauty is that it will be an engaging experience that can take people, you know, many hours. And then there's going to be ongoing programming and changing things so that will hopefully attract more people and keep them longer.
Sarah, how are you connecting this then to the America's 250th birthday celebration?
Well, you know, we didn't have a lot. There wasn't, you know, obviously our tribal nations were thriving 250 years ago, but we don't have, you know, a lot of American traditional history that happened here in North Dakota 250 years ago. Most of it is tied to those tribal nations. So essentially, this is kind of our hook. We haven't been super aggressive in marketing nationally, other than this big event and making sure that people know that they can come out and experience the library as part of their 250th travel.
We're enjoying our conversation with Sarah Audie Coleman. We're talking about a lot of buzz that's happening around North Dakota tourism right now, and for good reason, of course, with the Badlands just being named one of National Geographic's Best of the World Destinations, and also with the, I guess, celebration of the opening of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library next July. You have a new collaboration, a music collaboration, Sarah, called Call It Home, that's also getting some traction here. Collaboration with Tiger Lily Gold. They have a new anthem. Tell us about this, how this partnership kind of was created and what's your hope for it.
Yeah, you know, we've been big fans of Kendra and Krista for a number of years, ever since they wrote that first North Dakota song when they were just teenagers in high school in Hazen, North Dakota. And so we've worked with them and tried to help them get their word out and get their music out there. And so it's been so much fun to see them kind of break out onto the scene in Nashville. That has been just, you know, super exciting. I think just this last weekend, they made their 20th appearance at the Grand Ole Opry. Which is remarkable. But they also were awarded, you know, the CMA Duo of the Year last year. So super great to partner with them. They ended up writing a new song for us. So we partnered with them to write a brand new song. They entitled it Call It Home, and we were able to release that in Nashville. Sony is their music publisher. And so we think it's just going to be a great way to tie them and tie North Dakota to their story, right? There's a lot of people in Nashville from Georgia and from Texas and from you name where else, but North Dakota is really part of their story and part of what built them. And they want to tell that story when they're out and as they grow. And so this is a great way for us to work with them. And yeah, we couldn't be more excited.
For people that don't think about tourism in our state, we live here, we work here, we go about our daily lives. We know what it's like. We love it. Why does tourism matter to North Dakotans? Why should we all think about it?
Yeah, you know, I think so many times people think of that tourism is, oh, that's, you know, number one, that's Medora. People automatically in North Dakota think of it being Medora. Well, yeah, Medora is a phenomenal attraction at the foot, you know, at the gateway to Theodore Roosevelt National Park. Seasonally, it's been very seasonal. It's growing and expanding beyond that, but that's one type of visitor. What we don't realize is people come to communities throughout the state, you know, every weekend for youth sports, and they come for, you know, weekend getaways, and they come for camping and outdoor recreation and hunting and fishing and concerts and you know, meetings and conventions and events. And so tourism is so much broader than most people think about. The other thing that I think is important to acknowledge is the fact that the same things that drive visitors to visit North Dakota are the things that we love to do, right? They're our quality of life amenities. They're the events that we want to go to. They're the restaurants we want to eat at. They're the unique, authentic experiences and events and festivals. And so it's a win-win. Anytime we develop something that will attract a non-resident or somebody, you know, somebody to bring new money to pay taxes in our state, also benefits us as citizens in rounding off our quality of life. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's easy to just think about, you know, dollars and, you know, okay, yeah, we generate $3.4, you know, billion in visitor spending. We have a huge potential we could easily double that with some additional resources and concerted efforts and some additional product. There's huge potential, especially now when we're so dependent on commodity-based, you know, industries like oil and agriculture. Tourism benefits every single county in the state. Everybody has tourism experiences. Fargo visitor spending exceeded $1 billion in 2024. And I think our smallest county was just under $1 million. So it's a statewide win-win. You know, you just couldn't get me more excited about this industry and trying to get people to understand the value.
A lot of the things that we've talked about are spring, summer, fall type of events, it seems to me, especially when you throw Medora in there, perhaps until the Theodore Roosevelt Library opens. How do you market winter to folks?
You know, winter's trickier, and we don't do a ton of marketing outside of North Dakota and the region for mostly because we don't have the budget to market year round, but also because we're still building out that product and that experience, right? Like we have stellar snowmobile trails. We have great little local ski resorts and experiences like that. But some years we don't have enough snow. And, some years we just can't deliver on that. We do a great job with ice fishing. I mean, Devil's Lake does as good in the winter as they do in the summer. And there are areas and pockets of the state that really do well. But even places like, you mentioned Medora. They are building out, they have concerts out there year round now. They're doing a great holiday series out there again this year. So they are diversifying and extending their season. Things like the Kris Kringle Market in Fargo and up at the Dickens Festival up in Garrison are other great examples, but we need to go beyond the holidays. We need to go beyond the holidays and think, like here in Bismarck, there's a kind of a Norwegian midwinter festival, kind of around the whole Nordic culture and the sauna culture and all that. And so we need to embrace it and celebrate it and develop more experiences that we can sell or that our local people will want to do here, right? So they don't feel like they need to escape.
Sarah, of course, the federal government is in shutdown. Has that impacted tourism in North Dakota?
Absolutely it has. Obviously places like the national parks and some of the state or the national historic sites are not offering any visitor services. So those visitor centers and places where they have the doors locked, people are going to be less likely to go. There's a lot of other choices for places to visit. Washington, D.C. is seeing a huge impact, obviously, with all of the Smithsonian and everything closed down and a number of the national monuments and all of that closed down. So, yes, it is impacting us. I don't have an exact dollar amount on it, but definitely hurting the travel and tourism industry. And when you look at the airline side, that's another huge, huge problem.
What about our visitors from the north, from Canada? Are they still coming to North Dakota?
Not enough of them. And we sure miss them. Our border crossings, we count personal vehicle crossings. And then we look at the number of people per vehicle. Both of those are down around 30% year to date. So we're talking about, $30 million plus dollars of lost visitor spending.
And so that's this year to date?
That's just this year. Mm. We were actually up in January, and then in February, the dwindling started, and it was dramatic. I think where we really noticed it was August that was the worst decline, and normally that's the heaviest, traffic in terms of especially tourists and visitors. That's when we see a lot of Canadians coming by. So, yeah, we miss them. We hope that they return soon.
Another thing that's on my mind, Sarah, our concerts and arts events. My wife and I were lucky to see the Book of Mormon last night in Grand Forks. We traveled up, we had dinner, then we went to the beautiful play. The Chester Fritz Auditorium is just stunning. Are those things that the Department of Tourism is interested in on a state level from your perspective?
Absolutely. People are seeking entertainment and recreation. It rounds off an experience. Sometimes it motivates a trip like it did for you. If you stayed overnight, you probably didn't stay overnight because it was close enough. But, if you're traveling, more than 50 miles or spending more than 5 hours in an area, that's kind of counted as a visit. So these kind of activities definitely motivate and especially can round off an experience and make a visitor stay longer. We don't get great metrics from some of the arts folks because I think it's hard for them to maybe measure the number of non-residents that they're attracting, but we know that they are.
Back here in Fargo, of course, Sarah, you're aware of the conversation relative to a new conference and convention center. What's the role of your department, if any, in how this progresses?
We really aren't playing an active role on that other than watching it. You know, I know that there are a number of proposals being looked at right now, and it is a definitely a need in the Fargo-Moorhead area. You know, that's how I started in the travel and tourism industry, was selling national conventions and events and global events. And you have to have the facilities to bring those folks in. And so in order to be competitive in that area, and especially with some of the big corporations that are headquartered and growing in Fargo, it's just a really important component of the travel and tourism industry. People don't necessarily think about meetings and conferences, but they're big dollars, just like a leisure traveler would be.
So you're kind of waiting to see what evolves, right?
Waiting to see and cheering that something evolves and that they're able to kind of fill that gap.
You were to give me the theme for 2026 from the travel department's perspective and the marketing perspective from the tourism perspective, what would you tell me that it is?
I'm going to say optimism. You know, I think that this year has been a challenge. We've had a number of things out of our control. We've also, you know, seen increased competition within our region. But with next year's opening of the TR Presidential Library, National Geographic just announced, you know, the top 25 destinations. You know, I think we're finally breaking through to the world's conscience, and they're aware of us more. And so I'm optimistic that we're going to be one of those trips that people have waited too long to take. We want more people to say, gosh, why did I wait so long to come to North Dakota?
You mentioned that word competition, Sarah. What are some new competitors that are out there that are impacting folks deciding whether to come to North Dakota?
Well, you know, obviously the natural thing for me to compare us to would be other states. And when you look at South Dakota and Wyoming, you know, they spend four times what we do marketing their states. And so does Montana, so does Minnesota. We just don't have a lot of marketing dollars to compete. So we lose market share. And so that's competition. But also, when you think about just consumers and discretionary income, anything competes for that, right? So it's not just, you know, it's not us just competing with our regional competitors or competing with Italy and Vancouver and everywhere else on where people are going to visit, but it's also in a tough economy, it's competing, you know, against how people are going to spend those discretionary dollars.
Do you feel with the TR Presidential Library opening then that it's a must for you to have a bigger ask when you go to the legislature?
Well, we will. We'll work with Governor Armstrong and hopefully get a larger dollar amount in his budget. I think we definitely have the case for it. We have been really transparent and held our feet to the fire and delivered strong KPIs, you know, for decades. And so I think really when people looked at it really specifically and took the time to understand it, I believe that, yep, this is going to be our year. Or our next guest, 2 years.
That's right. We work in the biennium. Our guest has been Sarah Adi Coleman, the Director of Tourism and Marketing for North Dakota, about the year ahead for our state's tourism group and also current events relative to tourism and marketing, from the Badlands National Geographic accolade to the new Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. 2026 is shaping up to be an interesting year for all of us. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your insights and joining us on Main Street.
It was fun, Craig. Have a good rest of your week and enjoy this beautiful fall weather.
And it has been great. Thanks, Sarah. Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather round, everybody. Tell you a story. Thursday welcomes our news director here at Prairie Public. Dave Thompson joins us again on Main Street. Dave, it's been a busy week for you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Craig. How about you? I'm
doing well, thank you. We have a lot to review in this week's news. Let's start with furloughed federal employees have a relief program. There's an update.
They have just started this program. They didn't know what they were going to come up with. There are more than 9,000 federal workers, and only a handful have applied so far, but they say that's okay because they can get some of the kinks worked out of the program, but they kind of expect that there will be more. Then they had this would also include the military members, but apparently the Trump administration has a plan to start paying military members again, so they might be out of that. But for example, with Fish and Wildlife or the Park Service, you might be able to apply for this low-interest loan that will tide you over until you get your money back.
So far, your statistics tell us, Dave, that 33 applicants have asked to be loaned about $384,000.
Yeah, it's the number of applicants is small, but $384,000 was kind of eye-opening to me.
Dave, Governor Armstrong has now appointed North Dakota's next superintendent of public instruction.
Absolutely. Now, Levi Bachmeyer, who is now the business manager of the West Fargo School District, also is a member of the Board of Higher Education. He will take the job once Kirsten Baszler finally, you know, moves into her job at the Federal Department of Education. So it'll be a little while. Interesting note about this, Craig, is that he will have to serve out, he'll have to do a special election first and then serve out the rest of Kirsten Baszler's term. So he'll be up again in 26 and in 28. And he said he's ready to do it. And, you know, he comes off as really knowledgeable about education generally, not just finance. And I've heard a lot of people who said that it was a good choice.
Dave, the North Dakota Legislative Council now is using AI, and I'm sure they and many others in the state will start using AI for a lot of different things. But what's the Legislative Council up to?
Well, what they do is they, when they draft legislation, they look back at other bills that had been that came before it. And now they're saying AI will help them summarize those bills and can inform how they draft the new legislation for the upcoming session. So it seems like a pretty good work, and they're doing it with freeware, free AI-ware that is offered online, and they seem to be liking what they're seeing so far in terms of how the summary is going to work and how that will allow them to write the legislation.
And be more efficient, for sure.
Absolutely.
Continuing on the legislative trend here, Dave, could be an upcoming North Dakota legislative special session. What's that about?
It's about some federal money that's coming our way in terms of improving rural health. Now, a committee that was set up specifically has had about three meetings to look at what they could use that money for. So they're going to come up with bill drafts, and they're going to see if the governor is going to call a special session, which he might, probably sometime January is what we're thinking.
Dave, there's some stress on how some of that money will be used, and North Dakota won't promise to spend 5% of it on tribal communities.
I think that's going to be interesting. That's going to be an interesting discussion in the special session. The Native American tribes are, you know, they have a legitimate concern about being part of this, and the committee did not approve it, but of course then the legislature will take a look at it, and that's the whole, you know, shebang, 141 members. So
Representative Davis has sure had some comments about this.
She certainly has, but she's very good in terms of looking at coalitions, so I expect her to kind of work some of her colleagues and try to get some approval before the session starts.
Dave, Main Street has spent time at the North Dakota Wildlife Research Center, and this is in Jamestown, and they are facing some serious job cuts. What's the latest?
Well, the latest that I've seen, and this is reporting from the North Dakota Monitor that I saw this morning, that what it appears that maybe most of the jobs are going to be cut. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because that's been a good service. This Wildlife Research Center has been around for a long time. And I think it has 30-some-odd people, and it might be down to five or less, we'll see what happens with that. I honestly think that North Dakota's congressional delegation might intercede in that.
If it were to be cut, it would be a tremendous jolt to the Jamestown economy.
Jamestown economy and also North Dakota as well.
Dave, Northern Cass wins a Blue Ribbon School designation. Back on the education topic here.
And, you know, you understand why. Northern Cass has been a school district that has been known to be innovative. They've tried some things. They've tried some new ways of educating. Governor Burgum pointed out that they were doing well. And they also got props from the federal government now.
Dave, Fargo could vote on a council form of government. What's the latest?
Okay, right now Fargo has a commission form of government with five members. They're all elected at large. They want to go to a council member. That would be eight people, and seven would be elected at large, and the mayor would still be elected, you know, basically by the entire town. But they're saying, okay, we're going to do it in wards, and ward members can, you know, focus on concerns of their wards instead of just the city as a whole.
All right, Dave, that's kind of our wrap-up with this week's news, but you spoke earlier today at Bismarck State College's Humanities Mixtape Rewinding the 1980s Symposium. What'd you talk about?
Well, first off, we talked about the Gordon Call situation, which dates back to 1983. It happened on February 13th. We talked about that with some law enforcement and representatives of the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Attorney General's Office about what happened.
And that was a murder, Dave, in the Medina area?
That is correct. Two federal marshals were killed near Medina. It ended that June in Arkansas, and I have a story about that, about how we found out about it on a Friday night, and we were constantly interrupting our classical music program. I got the time, four bulletins. I mean, we went on the air about every 15 minutes. The other thing we talked about is how covering news has changed since the 1980s. And there are some positives, but there are some negatives, and I talked about both.
Dave, it's something that you've experienced, you've watched, you've lived it now. You've been our Prairie Public News Director for a long time, including way back then, and we sure appreciate all the work that you have done. What are you and your news team working on for next week, Dave?
Well, we've got some other previews of what might come up during a special session on healthcare. There are some things that are talking about the oil economy and some prices that are pretty soft right now, but North Dakota's keeping the oil production up, and that's kind of helping offset things. So we're working on that and some other economic-type stories.
Well, Dave, we hope you have a wonderful weekend. Again, thanks for speaking at that symposium earlier today in Bismarck, and we'll see you again next week right here on Main Street.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Health Partners, offering a simplified approach to health plans, customer service, and community partnerships in North Dakota. Learn more at healthpartners.com/Dakota Plans.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home on All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for The Middle Live. That follows Main Street on Prairie Public. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Today, Area Voices producer Andrew Zingel takes us to Reamer, Minnesota to meet mural artist Cheyenne Renee. She's on a mission to paint 50 murals in 50 states. And for Minnesota, she chose a wall outside the Rusty Bucket in Reamer. Andrew talks with Cheyenne about her passion for art, the inspiration behind her work, and what it means to leave her mark in communities across the country.
So the 50 and 50 project is a mural project that I came up with in 2022 as a way for me to focus on art full time and be able to travel across the country, but to blend my passions together. And I was really interested in learning more about economic development and tourism in small communities. So that's a big part of the project, is highlighting small towns and communities in each state. So I'm painting one mural in one small town in all 50 states.
So how do you go around deciding which cities to paint a mural at?
I have a section on my website where people can nominate towns. A lot of people nominate their hometown. And then I also have a community of people that follow along on places like Facebook and Instagram. So I have a lot of comments or people that reach out and message me nominating their, you know, small towns that they've gone through. And then basically I go online and I try and get connected with the local chamber of commerce or a nonprofit or organization in the town, pitch the project to them, and then get connected with the right business or client.
So this is a double question. What was your first state that you did, and how many states have you done so far?
So my first state was Virginia, and I painted in Covington, Virginia, which is my hometown. And then I am currently on state number 30, which is Minnesota.
So with this kind of project, having to come up with 50 different murals, how is your creative process work? Like, how do you decide what's going to go on each mural?
It's been really different in each location. The way that I set the project up, I try to be as flexible for whoever I end up working with. So it depends on what wall I'm working on and what business I work with. So sometimes they have something really specific in mind, and then sometimes they just want me to come and be inspired by the landscape and create something that I'm inspired to create. But a lot of the times, and something that I focus on a lot specifically is highlighting things within the mural that are going to be relevant and meaningful to the community that has to see them the most.
With having such, because you're trying to complete this project within by the end of the year, correct? So with that quick of a turnaround, like, that doesn't give you much time to think about, like, what you're going to paint. So I'm just curious for that, as you as an artist, are you accustomed to having these kind of quick turnarounds of coming up with ideas and creating them in a short span of time?
Yeah, definitely. It's been an adjustment for me. Traveling and doing this full time and putting all of my effort into it has kind of, I'm excited to do it and I wake up excited to do it. So that helps me have the energy to kind of keep going. Some of the murals, I have actually been in contact with those locations for over a year and a half. And it's this back and forth of trying to find the right wall and right imagery. And then sometimes it's as quick as I'm meeting a client, they say yes, and I'm working on a mock-up design, and within 24 hours I'm painting. So yeah, I have to learn to be flexible.
So this is a question I ask for everyone I interview on this program. Do you remember when you first got interested in art?
It's a great question. I think I was always a kid that liked to draw. And then I think around the age of 11 or 12, I saw Bob Ross painting really late one night on TV. And that was the first time that I had ever picked up acrylic paints and started painting on canvas, like with intention other than elementary school art. So I think that made it accessible and made me interested in wanting to practice and spend time doing it on my own.
So how did you make the leap to murals? Because that's something I'm always fascinated about, because it's, gosh, such a large scale project. How did you get into making murals?
It was a little accidental. I started doing commission canvas work in my hometown, and then I tried to be involved in anything that I could in my teenage years that involved art. So people started asking me to paint their windows at Christmas time. So that was larger scale, and I got used to that, and I really enjoyed the speed that you have to paint when you paint a window or something like that for someone. And then when I started doing murals, everything kind of clicked together. I was able to achieve the imagery that I wanted a little easier when I work large scale. So I think for some people, it just like there's some artists that work micro, I think some artists can visualize things on a larger scale.
What has been like the biggest one you've worked on so far?
The biggest one that I've gotten to work on, there's one in my hometown that I did that's 450 feet long, but so far for the project, the largest one has been in Ronan, Montana, and I did that as a collaboration. And I don't know the exact dimensions of that, but it's a three-story tall building and it's very long.
So when setting up these projects with the communities, like, what's kind of the setup for, like, do they help you find a place to stay while you're here? Or like, what kind of planning do you have to do when you're coming into these towns?
For each location, it's been really different. So I enjoy traveling in all facets. So I'm really happy to ebb and flow as I need to. Sometimes I stay at state park campgrounds. Sometimes it's as easy as I park my RV or my camper truck in somebody's parking lot for a few days while I'm working. And then sometimes I get blessed to have a hotel or Airbnb that somebody pays for or that I'm able to pay for through the project.
So let's talk about the one you're working on here in Reamer. Maybe describe what you're creating on this mural and how you came up with this idea for specifically for Reamer.
Yeah, so the one that I'm working on here is a 10 foot by 15 foot, and they built a billboard for me to paint. And they wanted something that was colorful and highlighted the landscape and wildlife here. So it's going to be a sunset scene with a large bald eagle, and we're going to hide a little Bigfoot silhouette in there somewhere because that's kind of becoming a mascot of the town. So yeah, I wanted to do something bright and colorful and do some elements like a sunset and a lake, which are just really fun for me to paint, but they were going to be also relevant to the people here.
So with these quick turnarounds, what would you say has been some like the challenges of having like such quick deadlines with these, with some of the mural projects?
I kind of like the excitement of all of it. I think that the only challenge I've really run into is sometimes if weather's against me, that can make it hard with scheduling if I have a next destination that I need to get to. And then other than that, it's just leaving these places. When I come in for such a short period of time, I really get to meet some amazing people, and the communities are always so welcoming. It is hard sometimes to say goodbye. I want to spend more time in those places.
So for most artists, creating art, maybe you show it to friends, maybe you show it at like at an exhibit or in a museum kind of thing, but you're kind of leaving a mark in 50 different states. What's that like for you as an artist to know that your work is like you're leaving a mark on across the country?
Yeah, that's also a really big question. I don't know. I feel like I'm dreaming sometimes, when especially this year when I've gotten to go to so many places and the trip itself has been so wonderful. Yeah, I don't know how to answer that exactly. I do think that for the documentary and this project, the idea that hopefully I'll inspire people to go to these towns and go visit the murals, that's exciting for me to know that there's people that are following along that eventually might get to see these murals in person and kind of experience part of what I'm getting to experience.
Yeah, so maybe let's talk a little bit about the documentary project. Talk about what it is and what it's called and like kind of the idea behind it.
Yeah, so when I came up with the idea for the project, I thought, what better way to highlight all of these communities than to film a documentary introducing people to this way of travel and the small towns that are kind of tucked away across the country. So the documentary will be called the 50 and 50 Project documentary, and it'll be public for free for anybody to view on my website. My goal is to have it out within 6 months of completing the final mural. But the project, the documentary, is going to be focused less about the artwork and not so much about me, and more about these communities and why it's important to think differently about how we travel and taking our time across the country, how that can impact small communities and small businesses.
And so how can people follow along on your journey?
The best way to follow along is on my website, which is CheyenneRenee.com, or on my Facebook or Instagram, which you can find me. If you use the hashtag 50 and 50 Project, you'll be able to find me.
That was Area Voices producer Andrew Zingle, who traveled with us to Reamer, Minnesota to meet mural artist Cheyenne Renee. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
The Fargo Public Library presents their Fall Into Jazz concerts featuring local jazz artists Saturdays, October 4th through the 25th, starting at 4 p.m. at the Downtown Main Library. More information at fargolibrary.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for October 23rd. The effort of North Dakota women to win the right to vote began in earnest in the late 19th century and continued to grow. Famed suffragettes like Susan B. Anthony arrived in the state to help organize the movement. British suffragettes also came to offer support and encouragement. In 1912, Sylvia Pankhurst spent time in North Dakota on a lecture tour. She spoke to large and enthusiastic crowds. When she came to Fargo, the newspaper called her one of the world's most notable women. When Sylvia's mother, Emmeline Pankhurst, arrived in the United States in the fall of 1913, she was immediately taken into custody by immigration officials who were concerned that her mere presence in the country would be disruptive. They feared her speeches would inspire civil disobedience. After her lawyer assured President Woodrow Wilson that she would not preach militants while in the country, she was released from custody. On this date in 1913, the Williston Graphic likened Pankhurst's appearances to a freak show. The newspaper warned North Dakotans that she had come to the U.S. with the sole purpose of grabbing off a small fortune of good American dollars. A later edition claimed Pankhurst was disturbed by low gate receipts, suggesting she was not overlooking the money end of the suffrage movement. When she left the country in December, the Bismarck newspaper pointed out that she was leaving with $20,000 in American money. Skeptics notwithstanding, North Dakota suffragists welcomed the British support. North Dakotans were in the thick of the fight. Elizabeth Preston Anderson of Tower City campaigned doggedly year after year for the passage of suffrage in the state. Dr. Cora Smith Eaton formed the Grand Forks Equal Suffrage Association in the 1880s. When the state legislature passed a measure defining voters as male persons in 1912, suffragists in Fargo formed the Votes for Women League. Beulah, Amidon, and Fargo participated in protests at the White House and were arrested in August of 1917. North Dakota voted in favor of the 19th Amendment on December 1, 1919. American women finally achieved the right to vote when the amendment was ratified on August 26, 1920. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
On Morning Edition, we hear from people with all kinds of expertise.
Trey Ryder, cornhole analyst.
Lars Gottrich is our heavy metal expert at NPR Music, and he's...
KLCC's Brian Bull shadowed a hornet hunter.
Something about Love Island USA expert. So, Brittany, for those who have not seen Love Island...
Learn something new with Morning Edition from NPR News every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays from 4 to 9 a.m. Central on Prairie Public.
And that wraps up this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. We're looking forward to next week here on this show. We'll have one of the first long-form interviews with Levi Bachmeier. He's just been appointed by Governor Kelly Armstrong to serve as North Dakota's next Superintendent of Public Instruction. From all of us here at Prairie Public, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend. And we look forward to seeing you next week, right back here on Main Street.